put the top factors that affect our well-being. And I just give you the top four. So number one is your mental health, right? And number two is your close personal relationships. Number three is your physical health. And number four is income, right? But we don't live our lives like that. We don't put income at number four. We put income at number one. And so if you get your priorities straight and before you make any decision, you're looking at it as in, here are my priorities. How is this impacting my mental health? How is this going to impact my close personal relationships? How is this going to impact my physical health, right? And then my income. If you have those priorities straight, you make decisions in a different way, which means that you don't burn out.
Welcome to Authentic Energy, a podcast dedicated to getting to the bottom of what it means to be your true, authentic self at work. I am your host, Wendy Brand, a former corporate executive turned transformation coach. Let's take this learning journey together as I meet with guests weekly to learn how they've managed or not managed to find the elusive boundaries and success in their career and what it really means to find balance. Hi, welcome back. You are really going to love this episode today. But before we get to our podcast guest, I want to remind you about the workshops and retreat that I have coming up in the next few months. First, in June, I'll be hosting my two-day True You workshop at my home in New Braunfels, Texas. We sit on 65 acres of Texas Hill Country, and it is the perfect spot to step out of your day-to-day, really think about who you are wanting to become. This workshop includes breakfast and lunch each day, a sound bath meditation, our True You curriculum, and as a special treat, a forest bathing session, Texas Hill Country style. Now, in July, I'll be hosting the first ever Authentic Energy Retreat at the beautiful Savannah Resort in Carefree, Arizona. This is a four-day immersive experience where you'll be pampered and catered to as you step into a more calm, rested version of yourself. This is an all-inclusive package that will provide you access to all of Savannah's on-site activities, well-appointed rooms, and our authentic energy program that helps you reconnect with your authentic self. Information on these events and others can be found on my website at wendybrandcoaching.com/retreat. Now, back to the podcast. My guest, Gifty Enright, has spoken at multinational organizations globally. Top universities like Oxford University. She has given a TEDx talk, is a highly regarded writer, and apart from her book, Octopus on a Treadmill, she is regularly published in newspapers and magazines. Gifty trained originally as an accountant and worked in a variety of blue chip companies before crossing over into IT and management consulting. She has implemented business and IT transformation programs globally in Europe, US, and Asia. She then became an author and a coach and continues to coach clients all over the world. But I am excited to have her as my guest because the conversation that we have is so rich, and she really does lean on her life as a mother and a coach and the clients that she's worked with. I think this episode is really going to resonate with you if you are a working mother or a working woman, you know, kind of on that verge of burnout like I was. She really does provide some great insights into how to prioritize what's important to us. So without further ado, here you go.
Good morning, Gifty. Thank you so much or good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. I'm so excited to have you. I wanted to just start by having you tell us a little bit about your career journey and what brought you to where you are today as a coach, a speaker, author, mother, all the things.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. Wendy, I really appreciate it. So I was one of those women who basically, I was just going to show everybody that, you know, I can do it and go toe-to-toe with the men and everything like that, very competitive and all the rest of it. And so I was there in the corporate world. I was working in consulting, working in IT, and working all the hours God sent. My children were quite little, and traveling and all that kind of stuff, you know. And it was just one day I woke up standing in a doctor's office clutching a spreadsheet of 14 symptoms. And that's when I realized that something had to give and that I couldn't go on living the way I was living. And also my husband was fed up with my complaining. And so I had to do something. And I had a choice at that point of being on medication for the rest of my life or living in a different way. And I chose to live in a different way and not go be on medication and have all the side effects and all the rest of it. Now, for me, what I call the tragedy of my life at that point was externally, I had everything, you know, all the social status, everything that people would look at and look at this and say, this is a successful life. But I was dying inside and my body was not allowing me to get away with the facade I had created. And so that was what got me to what I'm doing now.
Wonderful. Your story resonates so much with me. I also ended up with health issues and had to, you know, that was caused by chronic stress. And I had to take a step back. Also felt like I had everything. I had achieved the level of role that I was trying to achieve, the financial amount I wanted to achieve that I had put out there. I mean, in my mind, I had it all, but my body was telling me otherwise. So appreciate you sharing that story. It really resonates with me. And we are seeing people leave the workplace in just astonishing numbers, as you know. And I've talked on the show, you know, and brought others on that have experienced this as well, that are just on the brink. Now, not everyone can afford to do what we did and step away. So what advice do you give for those that are finding themselves in a similar situation?
So I say to people, they need to get their priorities straight. And so we live in a society that prioritizes money and, you know, the externalities that people can see. And actually, just yesterday, I put out a blog about, should we be measuring wealth by self-worth rather than net worth, you know? Is get your priorities straight. Now, London School of Economics did research, this is going back years now, and where they put the top factors that affect our well-being. And I just give you the top four. So number one is your mental health, right? And number two is your close personal relationships. Number three is your physical health. And number four is income. Right. But we don't live our lives like that. We don't put income at number four. We put income at number one.
Yeah.
And so if you get your priorities straight and before you make any decision, you're looking at it as in, here are my priorities. How is this impacting my mental health? How is this going to impact my close personal relationships? How is this going to impact my physical health? Right. And then my income. If you have those priorities straight, you make decisions in a different way, which means that you don't burn out. And so for those people in the workplace now, stressed out and all the rest of it, they don't have to get as dramatic as you and I. They can just get their priorities straight.
That is so beautiful and rings true for me. And women that I have talked to that I share my story with, and they're like, yeah, I don't feel that, Wendy. I don't think I'm going to get burnout. I've never prioritized money over, you know, there are some women and men maybe, but women I know that they have their priorities straight. And I, the way that you've just broken that down makes sense. And the women that aren't struggling with burnout have those things in place, right? They're not prioritizing the money first. But it is on the list. I noticed that. So
yes, it's important. Be, right? It is important because food is not free. Electricity is not free, right?
Yeah.
You have children, they're not free. They have to be fed. So it is on the list. It is important. So we're not here about demonizing the money.
Right.
But it has to be put in its rightful place. It does not deserve to be at the top of the list.
Yeah. And I know one of the things that you talk about in the mastermind class that you have is specifically for working mothers. Mm. Can you share with us some of the things that you recommend to prevent burnout for mothers?
Yes. So, and thank you for watching the masterclass. So in the masterclass, I talk about you can have it all. And I actually, when I coach women, I'm pushing them to have it all. And you might think that that is a bit of a paradox because I'm all about avoiding burnout. So why am I pushing the women to have it all? And it takes skills to have it all and not burn out, right? And so, yes, have it all, but do not do it all. And that is what people don't get. And they think they have to do it all. And that is where you need to get smart. And so in terms of avoiding the burnout, A, you have to be comfortable asking for help. And it takes self-esteem to ask for help, right?
Yes.
Some people just do not have the self-esteem to ask for help because they think that by asking for help, it means that they are a failure, right? And you have to give people actually the privilege of helping you. There are people standing around to helping you. And so it's you understanding that. And sometimes it means actually going out and building that community of people to help you. Because when we're talking about children, it takes a village. But what they don't say is that you have to build your own village, right? And so it's up to you to develop those relationships of that give and take of people that will help you, will drop everything to help you, where you will drop everything to help people. And that is also good for your mental health as well. So, you know, it is really, you know, the second thing I said, which is a close personal relationships, is to have that group of people that you know will help you. That always makes you feel safe. It releases oxytocin. It makes you feel connected, that you have a sense of community, right? And that avoids burnout. And then the other thing I teach the women I coach is equitable living. Now, equitable living means that, and just today somebody posted on LinkedIn about the mental load the women have, even though they work and their partners work, and suddenly the women still, right? And honestly, the women I work with, we take out a spreadsheet. I've got a spreadsheet that I make them fill in, because even those that think are in egalitarian marriages or partnerships, when you get down and look at it, you find that the women are doing 75% of the work, right? And there's research to show that actually 75% of the work, you know, of household chores and caring responsibilities and nurturing responsibilities is done by women. So there's a fact there, statistics are there. And but even though the statistics are showing 75% are done by women, these women that are doing the 75% actually think that they're in equitable relationships. And that is the bit that makes me laugh. It is only when you write it down, which is why I make them, I give them a spreadsheet. And then they say, oh, really? Yes, really. Because we absorb all these things. On our way to bed in the evening, we were switching on the dishwasher, you're putting a load of laundry in, and that is just on your way to bed. You don't even think about it. Yeah. Do you know, as the men just get up and go to bed, do you know? And again, we're not demonizing the men here, but for my women that I work with, it's equipping them with the skills to be able to get your partner involved, right? So this is where you learn to live equitably. And people, and then with grown-up children, and they're still running around and doing everything for them. What's that about, right? You have to live equitably, because if you're not doing that, again, you're ruining the children's self-esteem and their sense of self, as in them learning to contribute to the household that everybody lives in. Now, if you have children and you have a partner and everybody's got their shoulder to the pump to get the household run, you will not get burnt out. So that is my gift to the working mothers out there, right? You have resources at your disposal. Build a community to support you. get your partner involved, get the kids involved. From my point of view, if the kid can stand up straight and walk, they need a job.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And you know, I heard something the other day about by us asking for help, we're actually, it's a gift to the other person to allow, I mean, to allow somebody to help, that's helping them, right? To be of service and fill their bucket. So I love that. Yeah,
exactly. It's a gift to the other person to allow them to support you. And it fosters closer knit ties, right? So when you're there burning yourself out, trying to do everything on your own and trying to prove to everybody that you're badass, what you're doing is alienating people, creating a distance. People can't relate to you because you always come across as, I've got it all, sus. And we know you haven't got it all, sus. So who are you kidding? You know, just chill out a bit. Let people in. Let in the support and build those close personal relationships because it's good for you, it's good for your hormones, and it's good for the community.
Yes. And that gave me chills because when I, as I was considering leaving my job, I did, you know, the Wheel of Life. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that tool where you look at all the different areas of your life and you kind of mark where are you? Like how much fun and entertainment am I having? How many personal how's my personal relationships? How's my work? How's my financial, all those things. And fun and entertainment and personal relationships were like zero. And I was like, okay, this is a problem, you know? So I get the isolating yourself, thinking you can just do it all. And it is isolating because you're not relating to others because they, there's nothing to relate to because you think you've got it all figured out.
Right. It's insane. It's insane. Cause you come up as this ice queen, you know, and that you don't have any problems and then nobody is offering to help you. And then you wonder why you're burning out. Do you know, it's like, relax now, let people in. We're all figuring it out. And as mothers, if we can let others in, and as we're all figuring it out, then you get a community, you do it together.
Yes. Now, do you think that women struggle more to prioritize themselves than men?
Yes, we do. And that is because of the society we live in. So it's a societal expectation, right? It's a societal construct. And that is what makes it harder for women to prioritize ourselves because we're expected to take on the nurturing side. We're expected to look after the aging parents. We're expected to, you know, the expectation from society on women is that our lives exist to be in service to the other lives around us, right? And so that is a societal expectation, but why should our lives be in service to other lives? We're human too. We deserve our cups to be filled. So it's that fight of always, you know, do I even deserve to take that time out for myself when my child needs me, when my husband needs me, when my mother needs me, when the dog needs me, right? So, yes. By the time you've finished serving all your stakeholders, your cup is empty. And that is why women really find it hard to prioritize themselves because like if there's always a crisis and stuff like that, or the child is ill, people expect the mother to take the time off work, not the father. I remember one time my son had to be taken to hospital for something or other, and I had a big presentation I couldn't get out of. So my husband took my son, and I spent all the time feeling guilty. But I'm thinking, my husband is a grown-ass man. He can take himself to the doctor. Why can't he not take my son? Why am I feeling guilty? Now, if the roles were reversed, would he spend 1 second feeling guilty? No. And it's not because he's a bad man. It's just because societal expectation is that I am the one to take the time out. You know, so when it's reversed, the women spend their time feeling guilty. And so this is where we women have to start working on this societal expectation and let the whole of society know that if we don't change this expectation, we're going to keep paying with our health. And if we're paying with our health, we're going to bring up miserable children with low self-esteem.
Yes, that is so true. And what about the younger women that are entering the workplace now, do you think it's easier for them because we've gone through it, and or do you think it's harder for them in some ways?
It's both. It's both, actually. It's easier and it's harder. It's easier because the likes of us have been there and we sort of beaten the path, right, for them. And so in terms of the challenges that we faced, we know what they are now. We've named them, you know, the biases in the workplace for women, for example, this is like six I can name. So you have the performance bias, and then you have likability bias, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't type thing. You have affinity bias, as in the people in power and stuff, they want people that look just like them, et cetera, et cetera, right? And then you have the maternal bias, where you just, you know, you get pregnant and suddenly people think that your brain is gone and you can't think anymore, and all that, right? And then you have attribution bias. Women, men get praised a lot for what it is, but when women achieve something, I mean, I'm not sure how many people even know there was a woman that invented the Wi-Fi, right? But everybody knows about Einstein and his genius. So that's attribution bias there, right, for you. And then there's intersectionality, as in if you get more than two of these biases. So women have to live with this all the time. And so we know this now. And so the younger women coming into the workplace, they have to suffer it. But now it's there, it's named, and people know it on top. But for them, on top of that, there is the fact that there are not enough women up there in the upper echelons for them to mentor them, right? Because women are still fighting. So it's that lack of representation affects them as younger women. I mean, we faced it, but, you know, for them, it is still there. And also in the office, there's such a thing as office housework. And normally the younger women, like this, for us, when we were still there, the men would try to do that office housework. You tell them where to go because we felt we'd earned our stripes. But for the younger women, you know, wanting to be liked and accepted, they're the ones making the teas and the coffees and getting the cakes and stuff. And they actually don't know there's a price to be paid for that, and that you would always be expected to do that. And because you're doing that, then people think you can't be a manager. Do you know? And then there is, for younger women, again, there's a work-life balance. So it's not like a woman with kids who is having to be strict with her hours. For the younger women, they have no ties on their time, perhaps, right? So they can work 12-hour days and whatever. And when they're doing that, they think they're being competitive. And it's good when you're young, you know, work all the hours, climb that, you be competitive. But what they don't realize is it sets your work persona. It sets, if you like, your work pathology. So then what happens is if you're not working 12-hour days, you feel you're not achieving. Do you know? And that is a danger for them. And last but not the least is that sexual harassment. So again, older ones like us, we can swat off the men and, you know, but the younger ones, they're afraid, they're not so sure, and the hand on the knee, they're not so sure. Whereas sometimes, whereas older women, the man would just a look will put them in their place. But they, you know, face it more. So, and then there's a small matter of social media. Right. And then the effect on that, because they were engageable. So the answer is yes and no. Right. It's easier in some ways because certain things now are known and named, and they have the language to be able to perhaps say things like hashtag Me Too, and everybody knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Whilst we didn't have that when we were coming up. But in another sense, it's more complicated.
Yeah. So for those that are staying in and the younger women coming up, what are three things you could tell, you know, that you would like to tell anyone, not just women, about entering in the workplace right now and well-being?
So basically entering in the workplace. So I will say to them, you are responsible to create your own boundaries. Mm. And that no manager, unless you have a really enlightened manager, people have got their own problems to deal with, right? So nobody's there thinking, oh, is she burnt out? No, right? So you are responsible for your own boundaries. And to be able to enforce your boundaries, you need good self-esteem. Because if you don't have good self-esteem, if you're not sure of your worthiness, if you're not sure of what you bring to the table, you will find it hard to say no when you're being asked to work another whatever. Do you know, 14 hours.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you are responsible for your own boundaries. And that's why you need to do your own self-development to understand your own self-worth so you can put that boundary there without thinking that somebody is going to think that you're rubbish because you refuse to work 24 hours. Right. So that's the first thing. You're responsible for your own boundaries. The second thing is you are responsible for your own well-being. You cannot palm them that off to somebody else, right? You cannot be expecting your boss to think, oh, is she burnt out? No, it's up to you to get your priorities straight. So in the workplace, you need to know what your priorities are and to get them straight in terms of the order I talked about, your mental health, you know, your close personal relationships, and make your relationships that way and get your priorities. Nobody can do that for you. And last but not the least, you are responsible for your own career progression. Right? If you're sitting there hiding your light under a bushel and thinking somebody's going to come and spot you for being a bright spark because you're just simply brilliant, it doesn't work like that, right? Particularly if you're a woman. Anyway, but it doesn't work like that. You are responsible, if you like, for your own marketing.
Yeah.
You know, and letting people know how brilliant you are, and you have to take responsibility for your own career progression because your boss is busy, you're not the only person that works for them, and, you know, unless you keep informing them how brilliant you are and look at me and this piece of work that I've done and all that, and women are not particularly good at that self-promotion, right? But somebody needs to remind the manager of that brilliant work that you've done, otherwise you will go to the bottom of the pile. So you're responsible for your own career progression. You are responsible for enforcing your own boundaries, and you are responsible for your own well-being.
Those are such three great points. And I think coming up, I confused the, you know, wanting to be seen and my work noticed rather than me talking about it or shining a light on myself. I shone a light on myself by working extra hard.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought, you know, the only way I'm going to get ahead, you know, they're going to see my work ethic and they're going to see how hard and how long I work. And that's probably what got me to the point that it got me. And so any advice for how to promote yourself without killing yourself, you know, keeping that well-being in balance?
Yeah, and that's a danger. So previously, when I said about your work pathology with the young people, where the fact that you can work 12-hour days doesn't mean you should, right? Because you have the freedom, you don't have children, whatever. So you're working all that long hours, and like you say, some people, that's their way of being competitive. That's the way of shining a light on themselves, and they achieve it. But it's a very expensive price to pay. Because, you know, you start as you mean to go on, and then people expect you to always be doing that 12-hour day. So when you don't do that 12-hour day, it's like, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Forgetting that everybody else was under-delivering all along, right? And that is the danger. And again, it's a self-esteem issue, because if you think that the only way you will be considered worthy is if you're killing yourself, right? You need to go work on your self-esteem, because as you get older, as you get more confident in yourself, I mean, for me, later on in my career, right, I can honestly say I was doing very little, but I was still crushing it. Why? Yeah. Because I knew what to do. Right.
Yeah.
I knew the levers to press. I knew how to delegate. I knew how to be visible without killing myself, and how to be visible without killing yourself is a skill, but it starts with you knowing that the 12-hour days is not the way to go. Yes, sometimes in an emergency, a project's got to go live and we all have to work around the clock. That is the exception. And when you need to raise the game, you raise the game. But if you want to compete on working 24 hours and showering in the office and sleeping under the desk, that is a very dangerous precedent, right?
Yeah.
And so the answer to your question is that, how do you do that self-promotion? How do you get to shine your light and stuff like that? First off, start with your self-esteem. Understand your worth, right? Know what you bring to the table, okay? And once you know what you bring to the table, make sure others know what you bring to the table. People cannot know unless you tell them. And so people think about the self-promotion, they're squirming, they think, I don't want to be pushy, blah, blah, blah. It's not about being pushy. It is more about how do you let your manager know, how do you let people around know, and it is just information. You're just giving people information. That's all. If you don't give them the information, they don't know how good you are.
Well, and I think you answered it really succinctly when you said, you know, you have to know first. You can't promote yourself if you don't yourself believe it.
Yes.
And so you're spot on. That's the key, right? Is just doing that self-care, understanding the work to understand what you bring and yes, believing it, right?
Yes, because once you know that, it oozes out of you. Sometimes you hardly even have to say it,
yes,
right? It oozes out of you because you stand there, you're self-assured, you know your beans, you know what you're saying, you know what you bring to the table. And it's like when somebody tries to minimize, may I repeat that, please? You know,
yeah.
And you say it assertively, not aggressively. And if you're coming from the point of this is a fact and I am just giving you information, there's no pushiness about it. But
yes,
for you to be able to deliver it like that, it starts internally with your self-esteem.
Love it. Wonderful, Gifty. Such rich, good information. And I want to kind of pivot a little bit to some more personal questions, if it's okay.
Yes. Yes.
So, what is, and this is something I ask these three questions of all the guests just to get to know you a little bit better. What is what is one thing that brings you joy?
Walking in the woods with my dogs.
Mm.
Love it. I could walk until my legs fell off. And I just love to go on these long walks with my dogs. And I could be there, they're doing whatever it is dogs do. So we're both there, they're doing their thing, I'm doing my thing, and I can walk and walk and walk and walk and walk.
I love that. Do you live near a wooded area that you...
I actually live in the woods. That was one of my lifestyle aspirations. I want to, because I love nature. And I live on this narrow country lane and you drive for about a mile before you start seeing any houses. You drive for a mile in the woods, you know, before you start seeing any houses. And
wow,
it's just beautiful and it's gorgeous. You know, rivers and pastures. Wow. Also, it's just... Love it. Love it. And so me and the dog just head out. And the most difficult thing is, which trail are we going to do today?
Wow.
Because there's so many.
Amazing. Okay. If you could go back and talk to your younger self, like age 5 or 6, what would you say to her?
Oh my God. Oh my God. So much. So much. First of all, will you relax? Will you just relax, chill a bit? And the second thing is, figure out what makes no. So know what makes you happy and figure out a way of earning a living with that.
Mm. Yes.
You know, because I came from a generation where you just did what you had to do, rather than what you even had the inclination or affinity to do. Right. So I am trained as an accountant, believe it or not. I mean, I'm the least accounting person I've ever known. But anyway, that's where I started off. My gift I was going to give to my children was to let them do what they love, but they had to know that whatever it is you're going to do that you love, you have to figure out a way of making a living out of that.
Yes.
And that is what advice I would have given to my young self, to actually follow what lights me up, but underpin it with whatever is lighting me up is got it. Keep me,
yes,
in the manner in which I'm accustomed.
Yes. Beautiful advice. Okay, finally, my last question. I love to travel and I like to hear where other people like to go. What's the what's your most favorite place you've ever visited? And then what's on your bucket list?
Oh, I've got so many places I've visited, so many places. But the place that I visited, I kind of stopped me in my tracks, was Cambodia. And I went to this place, I forget the name, and it was, it had a whole village on stilts, you know, on the road, because it's like swampy, there's just like water everywhere. So in the wet season, the water came up, and so they lived on stilts of the water. And it was just beautiful. I mean, it was quite a poor area, but it just, it was beautiful and stunning. And I went on one of these boats, and we, and to this day, I regret not taking a picture of it, but there was this young mother on this boat that she was paddling herself, wasn't it? It was a canoe, you know, she's paddling herself, and she had a baby, no more, not even, it didn't look like a year old to me, like on her lap, there where she sat sort of cross-legged with this baby, and she was paddling, and the baby just sat still throughout, and I was just, wow. I thought, wow, I wish I had taken a picture of that, because when I describe it to people, it's like, really? Yes, and I would have been petrified of the baby falling into, you know, the river and stuff, but yeah, it was stunning, and then also, you know, in Cambodia, they have Angkor Wat, which is one of the most, the oldest, I think, the oldest Hindu temples in the world, you know, is there, which is stunning, so... so that was one of my favorite places to visit, actually.
It sounds amazing. I visited Vietnam about 7 years ago, and it sounds very similar. And we, there was a woman, and we went on this river, and she was rowing with her feet because her arms were tired. And then she just sat back and used her feet. I was like, wow, that is
amazing
talent.
It's just amazing.
But it was beautiful landscape as well. And the people were amazing. Yeah. And then what's on your bucket list?
Oh my God. So I'm a yogi and I can't believe I've never been to India. I just can't believe I have never been to India, and I refuse to die unless I go to India. So that has got to happen. I don't know when, but that has got to happen. And then also Japan. I've been there once, but you know what it's like on a business trip. You don't really see anything, you know, it's hotel rooms and whatever, whatever. So I would like to go and do it properly. You know, because I'm fascinated by the Japanese culture. I went to one of the parks, I think it was Shinjuku Park or something it was called. It's beautiful, the trees and all that. And I would like to do it properly when it's not a business trip and I can actually go and do it properly. And my son is also fascinated by Japan. So maybe we could do a mother and son trip.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. How old are your kids now?
23 and 18.
Okay. I have a 20-year-old son away at school. That age is, it's good because they're starting to find their own way, you know?
Yes.
But he still calls home to, you know, to ask for money, but no.
Yes. They. Yes. I think until they start working, that's just something you just have to live with. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Gifty, this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for your time. I'll put in the show notes how people can find you, but if they want to attend your masterclass or learn more about your coaching, how can they find you?
So on my website, so giftyandrai.com, there, if you go there and you click on coaching, you get access to the masterclass. And then after that, if you want to speak to me, you can just book a one-to-one with me that way. And all my other stuff is on my website because I write a blog as well. They can read that to get a feel for me, you know, the sort of things I talk about. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on the socials. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, so nice to meet you. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I've had fun.
Thank you. Loved that episode. Loved the conversation. It's probably one of my favorites so far. Hope you guys enjoyed it and got as much out of it as I did. Here are my takeaways. Number one, get your priorities straight. We should be prioritizing our lives in a way that prioritizes our well-being. That would look like this. Number one, mental health. Number two, close personal relationships. Number three, personal health. Number four, income, rather than income first. This allows you to make decisions in a different way and prevent burnout. Number two, you can have it all. It takes skills to have it all and not burn out, but having it all does not mean doing it all. Number three,
avoiding the burnout. You have to be comfortable asking for help. You must give people the privilege of helping you. Number four, it takes a village, but we have to build the village. Develop the relationships that can build your village. Having close relationships helps you feel supported and safe and creates oxytocin, which can help with burnout prevention. Number five, you have to live equitably. Research shows that at least 75% of the work in the household is done by the women. Those in these relationships often think that they are in an equitable relationship. But you have resources at your disposal. In addition to building a community to support you, make sure that everyone in the family has a job. If the kids can stand up straight and walk, they need a job. Number six, while you're busy doing everything on your own, trying to prove to everyone that you're a badass, what you're doing is alienating people, creating distance. Let people in. Let in the support. Build those relationships. It's good for you. It's good for the hormones, and it's good for the community. Number seven, you are responsible for setting your own boundaries, and to be able to set your own boundaries, you have to have self-esteem. Number eight, you are responsible for your own well-being. You can't pawn that off on someone else. It is up to you to get your priorities straight. Number nine, you are responsible for your own career progression. Number 10, the fact that you can work 12 hours doesn't mean you should. Number 11, how do you effectively promote yourself? Understand your worth, know what you bring to the table, and then make sure that others know what you bring to the table. When you know it and build that confidence, it starts to ooze out of you. Number 12, know what makes you happy and figure out a way to earn a living doing that. If you found this episode valuable, I hope you will go on and rate it and make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so that you are notified each week when a new episode drops. And if you know someone that might benefit from the episode, I'm thinking working moms and working women that think they have to do it all, please share this podcast with them. It means a lot to me. Finally, if you are looking to connect with Gifty directly, maybe check out some of her programs, you can find her at www.giftyenright.com. That's GIFTYENRIGHT.com. She's also on social media. I'll put all the links in the show notes. That's it. Thank you so much for listening. It means so much. Have a great day.